tender flame, tales of romance. I'm Mardell, reading The Blue Castle by L.M. Montgomery. Chapter 26. The next day passed for Valency like a dream. She could not make herself or anything she did seem real. She saw nothing of Barney, though she expected he must go rattling past on his way to the port for a license. Perhaps he had changed his mind. But at dusk the lights of Lady Jane suddenly swooped over the crest of the wooded hill beyond the lane. Valency was waiting at the gate for her bridegroom. She wore her green dress and her green hat, because she had nothing else to wear. She did not look or feel at all bride-like. She really looked like a wild elf, strayed out of the greenwood. But that did not matter. Nothing at all mattered except Barney was coming for her. "Ready?" said Barney, stopping Lady Jane with some new horrible noises. "Yes," Valency stepped in and sat down. Barney was in his blue shirt and overalls, but they were clean overalls. He was smoking a villainous-looking pipe, and he was bareheaded, but he had a pair of oddly smart boots on under his shabby overalls, and he was shaved. They clattered into Deerwood and through Deerwood and hit the long wooded road to the port. "Haven't changed your mind," said Barney. "No, have you?" "No." That was their whole conversation on the 15 miles. Everything was more dreamlike than ever. Valency didn't know whether she felt happy or terrified or just plain fool. Then the lights of Port Lawrence were about them. Valency felt as if she were surrounded by the gleaming, hungry eyes of hundreds of great, stealthy panthers. Barney briefly asked where Mr. Towers lived, and Valency as briefly told him. They stopped before the shabby little house in an unfashionable street. They went into the small, shabby parlor. Barney produced his license. So he had got it. Also a ring. This ring was real. She, Valency Sterling, was actually on the point of being married. They were standing up together before Mr. Towers. Valency heard Mr. Towers and Barney saying things. She heard some other person saying things. She herself was thinking of the way she had once planned to be married, way back in her early teens, when such a thing had not seemed impossible. White silk and tulle veil and orange blossoms, no bridesmaid, but one flower girl in a frock of cream shadow lace over pale pink, with a wreath of flowers in her hair, carrying a basket of roses and lilies of the valley, and the groom, a noble-looking creature, irreproachably clad in whatever the fashion of the day decreed. Valency lifted her eyes and saw herself and Barney in the little slanting, distorting mirror over the mantelpiece. She in her odd, unbridled green hat and dress, Barney in shirt and overalls. But it was Barney. That was all that mattered. No veil, no flowers, no guests, no presents, no wedding cake, but just Barney. For all the rest of her life, there would be Barney.
"Mrs. Snaith, I hope you will be very happy," Mr. Towers was saying. He had not seemed surprised at their appearance, not even at Barney's overalls. He'd seen plenty of queer weddings up back. He did not know Valency was one of the Deerwood Sterlings. He did not even know there were Deerwood Sterlings. He did not know Barney Snaith was a fugitive from justice. Really, he was an incredibly ignorant old man. Therefore, he married them and gave them his blessing very gently and solemnly, and prayed for them that night after they had gone away. His conscience did not trouble him at all. "What a nice way to get married," Barney was saying as he put Lady Jane in gear. "No fuss and flub-dub, Well, I never supposed it was half so easy.
Oh, for heaven's sake, said Valency suddenly, let's forget we are married and talk as if we weren't. I can't stand another drive like the one we had coming in. Barney howled and threw Lady Jane into high with an infernal noise. And I thought I was making it easy for you, he said. You didn't seem to want to talk.
I didn't, but I wanted you to talk. I don't want you to make love to me, but I want you to act like an ordinary human being. Now tell me about this island of yours. What sort of place is it?
The jolliest place in the world. You're going to love it. The first time I saw it, I loved it. Old Tom McMurray owned it then. He built the little shack on it, lived there in winter, and rented it to Toronto people in the summer. I bought it from him, became, by that one simple transaction, a landed proprietor, owning a house and an island. There's something so satisfying in owning a whole island.
And isn't an uninhabited island a charming idea? I'd wanted to own one ever since I read Robinson Crusoe. Well, it seemed too good to be true. And beauty.
Most of the scenery belongs to the government, but they don't tax you for looking at it. And the moon belongs to everybody. You won't find my shack very tidy. I suppose you'll want to make it tidy.
Yes, said Valency honestly. I have to be tidy, but I don't really want to be, but untidiness hurts me. Yes, I'll have to tidy up your shack.
I was prepared for that, said Barney with a hollow groan.
But, continued Valency relentingly, I won't insist on your wiping your feet clean when you come in.
No, you'll only sweep up after me with the air of a martyr, said Barney. Well, anyway, you can't tidy the lean-to. You can't even enter it. The door will be locked, and I shall keep the key.
Bluebeard's chamber, said Valency. I shan't even think of it. I don't care how many wives you have hanging up in it so long as they're really dead.
Dead as doornails, you can do as you like in the rest of the house. There's not much of it. Just one big living room and one small bedroom. Well built, though. Old Tom loved his job. The beams of our house are cedar and the rafters fir. Our living room windows face west and east. It's wonderful to have a room where you can see both sunrise and sunset. I have two cats there, Banjo and Good Luck. Adorable animals. Banjo is a big, enchantingly gray devil cat, striped, of course. Why, I don't care a hang for any cat that hasn't stripes. I never knew a cat who could swear as genteelly and effectively as Banjo. His only fault is that he snores horribly when he is asleep. Luck is a dainty little cat, always looking wistfully at you as if he wanted to tell you something. Maybe he'll pull it off sometime. Once in 1,000 years, you know, one cat is allowed to speak. My cats are philosophers. Neither of them ever cries over spilt milk. Two old crows live in a pine tree on the point, and are reasonably neighborly, call 'em Nip and Tuck. And I have a demure little tame owl named Leander. I brought him up from a baby, and he lives over on the mainland and chuckles to himself at nights. And bats, it's a great place for bats at night.
Scared of bats?
No, I like them.
Well, so do I. Nice, queer, uncanny, mysterious creatures.
Coming from nowhere, going nowhere, swoop. Banjo likes them, too. Eats them. I have a canoe and a disappearing propeller boat. Went to the port in it today to get my license, quieter than Lady Jane.
I thought you hadn't gone at all, that you had changed your mind, admitted Valency.
Barney laughed. The laugh Valency did not like. The little, bitter, cynical laugh.
I never change my mind, he said shortly.
They went back through Deerwood, up the Muskoka Road, past Roaring Abels, over the rocky, daisied lane. The dark pine woods swallowed them up, through the pine woods where the air was sweet with the incense of the unseen fragile bells of millennia's that carpeted the banks of the trail, out to the shore of Mistowis. Lady Jane must be left here, they got out. Barney led the way down a little path to the edge of the lake.
"There's our island," he said gloatingly. Valency looked and looked and looked again. There was a diaphanous lilac mist on the lake, shrouding the island. Through it, the two enormous pine trees that clasped hands over Barney's shack loomed out like dark turrets. Behind them was a sky still rose-hued in the afterlight, and a pale young moon. Valency shivered like a tree the wind stirs suddenly. Something seemed to sweep over her soul. "My blue castle," she said. "Oh, my blue castle." They got into the canoe and paddled out to it. They left behind the realm of everyday and things known and landed on a realm of mystery and enchantment where anything might happen, anything might be true. Barney lifted Valency out of the canoe and swung her to a lichen-covered rock under a young pine tree. His arms were about her, and suddenly his lips were on hers. Valency found herself shivering with the rapture of her first kiss. "Welcome home, dear," Barney was saying. Please join me next time for another romantic chapter of The Blue Castle by L.M. Montgomery. Until then, love deeply and live beautifully.